Senator Chuck Grassley. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning. How are you doing out there in Iowa? I just got back last night about 7 o'clock from a long weekend in Iowa and being in some parades.
Yeah, oh, I bet you were. And we just had a nice big rainstorm this morning, much needed rain, probably need rain up at New Hartford as well, I would guess.
We are in, I just saw a map. We're in a part of the state right on the edge of where they've had a little more than normal rainfall, but still nothing that's harmed. And the crops at our corn soybean farm look pretty good. I haven't talked to my son who runs the family farm, but it looks to me from the road pretty good crop.
Good, good, good. Big doings yesterday. I guess we'll jump right in. What did you think of the performance? 14 minutes of laying out a pretty compelling case against Hillary Clinton, only to conclude, nah, I don't think we'll go beyond here with it. That was quite a thing by FBI Director Comey.
Well, she wasn't indicted for a criminal case, but I think she was indicted for having a lack of judgment and incompetence. Because he more or less said that she should have known better in some cases. Anybody that works in this area, the area he means of intelligence, ought to be able to recognize when things are classified or not classified and not just go by something that is at the top of a communication. Another thought that went through my mind is how do you square this with the fact that General Petraeus was found guilty of at least a misdemeanor? And under like circumstances, making sure that classified documents aren't secured or removed from a certain place and not secured, why would she not at least indicted? Maybe a misdemeanor doesn't have an indictment, but either way, charged with a misdemeanor the same way that General Petraeus was.
Yes, that seems, and there are other cases besides General Petraeus that are a little less known, but no less, they are lesser than what she has done. It was, I'll admit, even though some people predicted it, I was a little surprised that he would make such a strong recommendation against prosecuting. Why don't they just hand over the evidence and let the chips fall? Why did he feel like he needed to put a lid on it?
I think giving some cover to the Attorney General.
That is quite something.
Yeah. Another thing is we've got Comey's statement. That's not enough as far as I'm concerned. So right now, I'm putting together a long letter to Comey to make sure that we've got access to a lot of information. In other words, the total record, the total investigation. Like, for instance, did Hillary Saturday ever take the Fifth? Or were there any conditions of some questions that she could not be asked? As an example. And then I hear that Paul Ryan is going to ask the House Oversight Committee to have Comey come before it, and I hope that gets done pretty soon, whether I would have a hearing in my committee might be based upon what we learn from the House Committee and how forthcoming they are. But remember, there's been dozens of Freedom of Information requests from the Attorney General, or not from the FBI, about a lot of what's going on in this investigation. And they were held up because there was an ongoing investigation. Well, there's no longer an ongoing investigation. So whether it's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which is it is in my case, or whether it's some nonprofit organization on the outside or even an individual on the outside, that has made a Freedom of Information request, now that this investigation is over, those things ought to be made public and available to the public.
Right. But you are the chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, that, and I'm writing the letter in that capacity.
Oh, great, great, great. Okay. Listen, I know this. You've been through a lot in all your years there, a number of scandals, all manner of things that you couldn't predict. Where does this rate historically on your big list of boondoggles?
In the long time I've been in the United States Senate, I'm not sure that I have. I'd have to put some things on paper to answer your question. But the difference between this and Clinton, as President Clinton lying, President Clinton was brought to impeachment because he lied under oath. I guess that you can't say that about Mrs. Clinton. She has misled the public, but at least she didn't do it under oath. That's the only difference I can see. But when she says that there's no classified emails, I think that was March of 2015, she said, we know that she was misleading us. She said there was no violation of setting up private servers. And we have the Attorney General, or not the Attorney General, we have the Inspector General of the State Department flat out saying that that there were rules violated in setting up a private server, and so many other things where she misled us. And of course, even the director of the FBI has more or less said how careless she was, and that's where you get me saying, previously that if she's not being indicted for violating a law, there's at least in Comey's statement in an indictment of incompetence and lack of judgment.
Gotcha. Between this, which might take some difficult political stance for you to do the right thing, and the difficult political stance, but the right integrity stance on the Supreme Court justice issue and the nomination of that. Has this made your reelection campaign more difficult, or has it helped?
I think it's made it more difficult, but I'm not going to worry about the campaign. People might think you do things strictly for political reasons, but there's sometimes you can't have any political judgment involved, and you got to do the right thing. And obviously, when I, within 24 hours of Scalia's death, put out a press release that we ought to do like Democrats suggested when we had Republican presidents, and you can't have one rule for Republican presidents and a different rule for Democrat presidents, I said, based upon understandings we've had for 30 years, that this ought to go over to the new president to fill this vacancy, and people ought to have a voice in the upcoming presidential election on what type of a person do they want appointing people to the Supreme Court. When you make a judgment that quickly, you can't think about the political consequences. But there have been some political consequences. But I'm going to leave that to the campaign. What I have to do, and I think it's the right way to campaign as well, just do the very best job you can as a United States senator. That's been my philosophy throughout other re-elections, and people will re-elect you when you're doing your job, and that's what I'm doing, and that's all I'm concentrating on. I'm going to leave the campaign to my campaign people.
That is a particularly refreshing stance, I will point out. Just was it yesterday or the day before, Newsmax had a big article, Senate Grassley faces race of his life to keep seat. That's a bit dramatic, but it's refreshing to hear of a person in Washington that will stand up and do the right thing in spite of the political price that might have to be paid thereof. That's what I did not see Director Comey do yesterday.
Well, he's got a non-political job, but maybe it has political considerations. He has a 10-year term, so he doesn't have to worry about being pushed out of office with a new president coming in. And I happen to think that he is well qualified, but it was a disappointment to me, based upon at least not having a charge of the misdemeanor of not handling public papers, classified papers, properly, as General Petraeus was sentenced to 2 years and a $250,000 fine, 2 years of probation, $250,000, I believe, is the figure. And then soon after Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she dismissed a ambassador to some African country for mishandling classified information. And there's some evidence that a Marine of lower officer rank was also disciplined, or maybe, I don't know what the exact result was, whether he was dismissed from the military, but he mishandled such classified information. And then to say that there's no chance of prosecution, maybe he's right from the standpoint of a higher level of evidence. You got to commit a jury for a felony, but a misdemeanor is an entirely different thing, and she wasn't even charged with that.
Did you find it curious that she came out the day before this and said she would retain Hillary Clinton, that is, that she would retain Loretta Lynch probably if she were to become president?
Well, there's a lot of things that happened all at once. Bill Clinton meeting with Loretta Lynch, the president you just gave, the statement you just gave of the presidential candidate saying she was going to keep that, and then having Hillary question just Saturday for 3.5 hours, and then have the announcement on Tuesday the way it was.
Simultaneous with the president going out and campaigning directly with her, which I, you know how the president gets scheduled. You need a month or at least several weeks to get the president nailed down on a thing like this. You don't just schedule the president tomorrow. That doesn't work that way. There's too many logistics to go ahead of it. So the fix is in. I mean, it seems like at least the president knew, and possibly Hillary and others, maybe Bill, many, many days before we did.
Well,
my bad. There wasn't a question there, but that
okay.
was my statement.
Well, then I'll just leave it as your statement. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to get you caught up in my thing. All right. Back to questions. It's occurred to me as we were analyzing Hillary Clinton that many people don't know about the Clintons because there have been generations of new voters since then, and they simply have no institutional memory like you or I would have of those decades back. By the same token, you've been in office much longer, and it occurred to me that people, even people that hear you on this show every month, might not know how or why we came to vote for you the first time, way back when. They don't know your background. They know what's in the news now about you. They don't know anything about you, though, and your family and your wife and the rest of them. Why don't you spend a couple of moments while we have some updating new generation voters who don't know Chuck Grassley back to his youth?
Well, I've spent my 82 years on a farm within 4 miles of the house I was born in, graduated from New Hartford High School, class of 16 members, went to University of Northern Iowa, BA 55, MA 56, worked on a PhD at the University of Iowa, which I did not complete because I was elected to the Iowa legislature in 1958. I served in the Iowa legislature from 1958 to 1974, but please remember that during the first 12 years, I think it was, that I was in the Iowa legislature, we only met every other year for about 3 months, maybe 3.5 months at most, got $3,000 for a session, or maybe, I think later on, $4,000 every other year. So my dad died in 1960, so I took over the 80-acre farming operation. And since you can't make a living on 80 acres and $3,000 or $4,000 as a state legislator, I spent 10 years on the assembly line at Waterloo Register in Cedar Falls making furnace registers. And I spent that time running a small press, putting screw holes in furnace registers. I was allowed to take a leave of absence every other year for 3 to 4 months to serve the people of Butler County, Iowa. I was able to buy a farm during the 1960s of 120 acres. So I was farming 200 acres later on in that period of time. Then I think it was 1969, we started annual sessions and we got $5,500 every year to serve there. And the plant closed down in 1971 because of union squabbling. And I was a member of the International Association of Machinists for those 10 years. Then we had a congressman retire in 1974, and I run for the House and was elected to the House. So obviously I wasn't a factory worker anymore, and I was still a small farmer. But we were able to rent my farm to a neighbor, and then later on my son took over the farming operation. And Robin, my son, still operates our farm. But I've been a full-time public servant since being elected to Congress in 1974. In 1980, I decided to run for the United States Senate, and I've been a member of the United States Senate since 1980, and been chairman of the Judiciary Committee the last 2 years, chairman of the Finance Committee for about 6 years, or I should say 5 years. And then my whole approach to public service is to be on the job when Congress is in session, so I have the longest session of not missing a vote of 22 and a half years of any of the 2,000 senators that have served in the United States Senate in 230 years. And then when I don't have to be on the job in Washington, D.C., which obviously the people expect you to be, but not every senator has not missed a vote for 7,700 votes or cast 12,000 votes overall, then when we aren't in session, I'm home in Iowa every weekend and during recesses holding town meetings in each of the 99 counties every year for 35, now 72 counties so far this year, and I should get those counties done. So keeping in touch with the people of Iowa and being on the job when we're in session, not missing a vote, is the characteristic of me for the last 22 and a half years.
And in amongst all of this, 5 children.
Oh, 5 children, 9 grandchildren, and 8 or 9 great-grandchildren.
Wow. All right. That's Senator Chuck Grassley, for those of you that forgot. We have about a minute left. I've taken you through some difficult questions, and then a partial biography there for you for people that are just coming into the voting booth. I think it's important to remind everyone, after so many years, a lot of times we simply focus on the things where we disagree instead of all the many things that we do agree with you on. Let's see what this caller has. You're the last caller. Go ahead.
Senator Grassley, I'd just like to thank you very much for your dedicated service.
Thank you for the call.
Well, that's a pleasing thing to hear, because a lot of times we get criticism. So to have somebody thank me for my work, I appreciate it very much. And I don't know what his name was, but whoever you were, thank you very much for the encouragement.
You get the last word today. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, at 10 o'clock today, which is a half hour from now, well, that's Eastern time, we're going to try to solve the opioid heroin problem that is showing up in eastern Iowa, but more prominent in New England. 43,000 people die a year from this thing, and we're trying to get legislation passed to enhance or to tackle this problem. And so we're both the House and Senate have passed separate bills, and I'm a member of the conference committee leading the Senate delegation to conference with the House to iron out the difference between the House and Senate bill to get a bill to the President of the United States.
Awesome. Thanks for the time this morning. Best of luck to you this week, and go get them.
Get back. Goodbye.